This is the Gary V Audio Experience.
What up, everyone? Welcome to episode 27 of Coffee and Commerce. As always, most of the time, actually, we've got our chairman and CEO of VaynerX, Gary Vaynerchuk, with us.
Hello, everyone.
And today we've got the reverential, brilliant, a true gentleman, incredibly successful gentleman, Brandon Cohen, the founder of Liquid IV. Thanks for joining us, Brandon.
Yeah, thanks for having me. Excited to be here.
Real quick, Zubin, I apologize, but the chat is off and running. I need to address two things that were chatted about right before we started. Christian Reza, please tell your wife I'm sorry she doesn't like me. My stance on college actually is not that extreme. It's a very narrow stance, which is there's so many kids that collect debt for a diploma that isn't practical in a 2021 world. And I think a lot of people should go to college, especially if their parents pay for it or if it's a full ride, it's a fun vacation. But yes, I think things are changing and I apologize, I want to meet her. Following up to that point, when he said my wife thinks doesn't like Gary Vee because of the college thing, 1995 Yoda said, Gary Vee thinks he's better than other people, he's a douchebag. Of course your wife hates his guts. Yoda, ironically, please do not confuse my conviction for my belief that I think I'm better. As a matter of fact, it's the reverse. I actually think I mean nothing and that if I die tomorrow, I'll have 12 hours of good talk on Twitter. Brandon will say that I was a good mentor and said a couple smart things. Zubin will say I was did it. But like, I believe I mean nothing, but I have conviction in what I believe. And I'm sure that comes across sometimes, Yoda, as that I think I'm better. I actually think I'm worse on the record. BC, good to see you, bro. Zubin, sorry, it was fun. The comments part of Coffee and Commerce is my favorite part. But what my second favorite part is the guests and this young man. And if you're watching, this very handsome young man has pulled off one of the great executions in direct-to-consumer in the last decade and deserves the floor. And I'm excited about that. And I know, Zubin, you can ask the best question. So here we go.
Let's go. Brandon, tell us about yourself. Tell us your story, and then we'll get into it.
Oh, man. I'll try and give the short version. But, I grew up a great family, middle-class family. I was big into sports, so I played, like, three sports in high school. Ended up getting fortunate enough to get a golf scholarship to play in college. It was always my dream and goal to be a professional golfer. My sort of in my last couple of years, I had some injuries and got a little bit burnt out. And so that was sort of like my first failure in life. I had always just blocked everything else out to make this dream come true. It didn't happen. And I was kind of at the end of school, like, you know, hadn't really paid much attention in school. And I was like, you know, what am I going to do? Love sports, so I went to go work for the Arizona Diamondbacks. I got a sales job. I was making 100 phone calls a day, which was actually sort of a blessing. I just learned so much about people and rejection and things that ended up paying off later on in business. And when I was out there, I became friends with a lot of the guys on the team. So I was, you know, 22, 23 years old, and they were all drinking Pedialyte, the baby hydration drink. I was always into like health and optimization and being at your best in order to perform, whether it was in business or in school or in sports. And I just thought it was silly that the best athletes in the world were drinking a drink that was designed for little kids. And so I started studying the science of, it's called oral rehydration therapy, which I won't get too sciencey, but when you mix sodium, glucose, and potassium, it helps water absorb in your bloodstream much, much faster. And it was actually being used by the World Health Organization, the science, in underdeveloped countries around the world to save lives from dehydration. So when I learned about all this, I was like, what other products are leveraging this here in the United States and helping, you know, adults, you know, live their best life. And at the time, you know, like about 10 years ago, there was nothing. And so I told my parents I was moving home and I was going to go get my MBA. And it gave me about a year to study when in reality I was starting the business. I got the business off the ground in the library where I went to college. I just sat in there for hours upon hours, got the business off the ground. And then
how many years ago was this? See, there's good usage for college. See?
I leveraged their library. That's exactly right. So it gave me a year to sort of get some wings because I just knew my parents probably wouldn't be, you know, they would always support me, but the more traditional path was more comfortable, obviously. So when I finally told them, they still wanted me to go. So I got into schools like NYU, Boston College. I deferred for a year and it gave me another year to work on the business. And by year two, I had investors, a few, angel investors wanting to give me money. And the investor said, you can't go to school. You need to run this full time. You know, I'll pay you a small salary, which then gave me the leverage to say, hey guys, I'm not going to go to school. So I have a really slow growth story. Everyone thinks we were this like overnight success, but from 2012 to 2018, we did under $1 million in sales in total. We got into Whole Foods in 2015. I would sell one stick at a time every weekend. I would sell it in and then go sample and demo product by myself. I'd go to local health stores, grocery stores, liquor stores. I would tell the owner, I had one newspaper article that they wrote about us. I said, put this on your shelf. They'd put it on by the front for free. I said, here, just take it for free. If it sells, call me next week. And I would have all my friends go buy all the stores, and then they'd send me Venmo requests and I'd pay for it. So I was losing free product and paying for it myself. And it wasn't because it was a mini growth hack, but essentially when people tried it, they loved it. But you have to have the marketing and backing to give it some time to get off the ground. And so those few weeks and that first impression with these store owners allowed them to then like it. And it gave me time to actually get real marketing going. So yeah, the sort of the end story to take you to now is like from 2012 to 2017, 18, we did under $1 million in sales. We then quickly jumped to three.
Brandon, can I ask you a question?
Yeah.
I mean, this is amazing, right? And it's funny because Gary and I were talking to the Hundreds a couple of weeks ago, and they did exactly the same thing. First time they got into retail, they got their friends to go and buy. I don't think they Venmo'd them, so maybe they owe them some money for that. But tell us about something. 2012, 2018, 17, you did $1 million in total revenue, but you kept going. What kept you going?
I get asked that question. I think I just...
Hold on, I apologize because I know it's a Brandon question. Did you say $1 million?
In total, in combination of 5 years, we did a total of under $1 million in revenue.
That's and by the lot.
Time, by the time we, well.
No, really. The reason I'm jumping in, and Brandon's gonna have a way better answer, I jumped in not to interrupt him, but I jumped in to flatter him because he's a real businessman and entrepreneur. And this is an important moment. This is my only moment to shine, so I had to jump in. We live in a framework now where people are using these proxies that are not real. How much money did you raise? There's so much money being printed. The trillions that America just printed for stimulus is now in the market. Where do you think that's going? There's so much money. Why did he keep going? Because he didn't go out of business.
Kept it alive. And
because he liked it.
Yeah, I loved
it. Sorry, go ahead.
I believe, the hard part is if you play the comparison game, right? Like we have some mutual friends where, and I'll get into how we got into direct-to-consumer later, but I have direct-to-consumer friends like Jake from Movement and other guys like that who did, they went from 3 to 75 million in their first 4 years. And in my first 4 years, we had just surpassed 300,000 in revenue, right? So if you're playing the comparison game, it's a lot different, but I believed in what we were doing. I loved what I was super passionate, clearly, about what I was doing. And so we built such a foundational business where it was so strong from the bottom. It was grassroots. We had sticks in people's hands. We had an incredible culture. We grew it the right way. We didn't raise a lot of capital at all. That by the time we actually had this hockey stick start to happen in 2018, 2019, we went from under $1 million to hundreds of millions, by the time we got acquired in 2020.
Well, I think that's exactly it, right? Like what Gary was saying, what you were saying, the comparison game and what people are hearing out there is what fucks people up, where they go, I'm only doing 200,000 in revenue. Fuck that. I'm going to go do something else. I'm not making any money. But to your point, and I did the same thing until we had our exit with Gary and company, like it was a very slow growth. And my entire point, as yours, Brandon, and Gary's, was like, I just want to keep this thing afloat, because I know I'm building something and I don't care if I'm making any money right now. I mean, I did want to make money. I had other people who were making a lot more money than I did, but I'm like, the fact that I can keep this thing going, like what I would look at is like, I've got enough business to be able to support payroll for the next 6 months. And that was my thing. It wasn't like I'm going to take money out of this.
Yeah. I invested in Brandon's company a couple of years ago, and it was the only investment I made in like a 2 year period, because I'd stopped investing. And we met.
Yeah.
And I remember literally in my head saying, I'm gonna regret not doing this. This is, because I stopped investing because I realized what I was doing wrong, which was I was investing in companies. And I promised myself I was done with that. And I was gonna go back to why I invested in Facebook, Twitter, and Tumblr when I was on fire, and why the mistake I made with Travis on Uber is I became a VC instead of Gary Vaynerchuk. And I said, I'm going back, and it's gonna happen with TikTok, with Mick Mack, with Rachel. Right? That one I invested in the human. And I remember I'm 20 minutes in with Brandon, and I meet a lot of high energy, excited about their business people. I'm one of those people. And the reason people have cynicism for me is the reason that a lot of people passed on Brandon too, is you don't really know when you meet that energy if this is the 8 out of 10 completely full of shit one, or the 2 out of 10 like, fuck, this is a big one, right? And I remember being in the meeting and asking some business, I just remember it. I actually, you know, the Maya Angelou thing, you remember what you feel now, like couldn't tell you a word of the meeting, can tell you everything my body felt. And I was 100% positive, and I invested, and it's what I want everybody, because I'm reading the comments. Please love your game. Because if you love your, like, that's why I think I got emotional when you said what kept you going. I'm like, he had no choice. He liked it too much. Of course, outside validation didn't matter. He liked it too much. He liked it too much.
Yeah.
He believed in his mission. He liked it too much. And he was capable enough. He didn't go out of business. A lot of people like it and go out of business. And most people are doing it for all the wrong reasons. Like, for everybody who's in here right now trying to be an entrepreneur, wanting to be an entrepreneur, please, you know, do it because you like it so much. You know, a lot of people in the comments right now saying some unfortunate news, it's now confirmed that DMX has passed, right? The reason people are so emotional about DMX is he had passion for his thing as an artist, and you feel that. There's a lot of people that go into the rap game for the money, just like entrepreneurship. And I think for a lot of people right now, like if you truly love your game, then you won't worry if you have a blue check mark. You won't worry if you have 1 million followers. You won't worry if you're doing $1 million. You just won't. You won't. It's like skiing. Do you play golf? Like, I use golf and skiing a lot. Brandon played golf for a lot of different reasons. But like, most people play golf because that's the thing they choose to do. That's their escapism. They like it. Do you ski? Because they escape. They like it. They swim. They play tennis. They go out at night. They go to the club. They watch sports. They play video games. For me, I'm trying to push the conversation of, can you make that your business? Because if you feel the same way about going skiing for a weekend as you do waking up Monday morning for your thing, which is how I live my life, and I see it in others, everything changes. All the good shit happens.
Gary, we talked about it on your podcast, but like, you know, from that story of you carrying your friends like wine out to their car. And like, for me, it, you know, similar, not as physical as that, but you know, it wasn't even like, I wasn't worried that all my friends who had their college degrees and were making 100,000 a year and going on vacations and stuff. I was so tunnel vision, and I was so passionate about what I was building. And I just knew somehow I was going to win. There was just, I wasn't going to not win. Right. And so the tunnel vision is what allowed me not to play the comparison game too much. And I loved it. And I knew we were going to figure out a way to win. And I think you, I mean, we talked about it. You had the same exact feeling.
I totally understand. Zubin?
No, I'm remembering now, and I think this is a good lesson for everyone else, where there's opportunity. You got to strike while the iron's hot. Brandon, in January 2018 in Vegas, we met. I think at the same time you met as well, Gary. The three of us were yes. there. And then Brandon talked to me and goes, hey, man, I've got this opportunity. Do you want to invest? And I didn't follow up, and I didn't invest. So Liquid IV is my Travis Uber story.
I love it. Eat it, Zubin. Right yeah. in your fucking mouth.
Oh, I fucking eat it every day. But I'm blessed
it's the
to know
best. Brandon as yeah, a human. It's the best. It's the best.
And just the way you know Travis, right? Like that's what it's about. Like at the end of the day, there are opportunities that come and go.
Oh, it's so much more fun to tell that story from the losing side than the winning
Maybe
side.
For you it is.
for you it will be too, because you're a young man, you're brilliant. We have a great friendship. There will be many, 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 many more opportunities.
Brandon, tell us a little bit. You mentioned something that I want to focus in on. Folks that you were friends with, folks that that you were spending time with, started direct to consumer businesses and had an like hockey stick instantly, right? You want a different path. You went down a retail big box path, and it brought different things with it, right? Tell us about that approach and why that was different and in many ways better than going straight direct to consumer.
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of ways to win, right? And for me, I just knew my skill set, right? Like, I wasn't like a developer who was like amazing at running Facebook ads. Like, that just wasn't my skill set. I was a people person. I developed some incredible relationships through sports. I developed an incredible relationship with someone Gary knows, Scott Emerson, who plays the big box game as well. And so it was just sort of, I matched what I was, what I knew I was good at, which was going to these retail meetings, explaining to them why our product would work. We were this total white space. They'd never heard of a hydration category. They wanted to put us in sports nutrition or diet or beverage. And I was like, I don't care where you put us. I'm going to drive people into the store and they're going to buy the product. And so, yeah, I mean, it worked well for us based on my skill set as the leader, because I knew that we could win that way. And so we did. We built the business super grassroots that way. And then what was so cool is, you know, my dad always says aces and spaces. Like my aces was getting these big box relationships, figuring out how to raise the proper amount of money to support inventory to launch. And then I found experts like you guys. And that's when I called, you know, I met you guys in Vegas and I sat with Gary there and I sat with you and you guys came in and ran, you know, built our website and Gary's team helped run all of our DTC. And so, you know, I, of course I knew enough to be dangerous in that area, but like I picked what my sweet spot was. And then I found experts around me to build that up. And what was so cool is like, because we had done it that way, by the time we did go direct to consumer and Amazon, which was a big part of it, you know, there was all these people who had already tried the product. So it made the, you know, the acquisition cost and everything, they dropped a lot because of that. And the other thing is like, what was so cool about building such a well-rounded business and not being so one-dimensional, whether it was only in store or online. So for example, when COVID hit, you know, we didn't know what was gonna happen. It was March of 2020, the world turns upside down, all retail shuts. That was half of, you know, that's a lot of our business. But we had a huge Amazon business and direct consumer, and all those customers started buying online. And then once stores opened up, like Costco, which was a big customer of ours, that business went right back up to where it was or higher, and our direct consumer business never dropped. So yeah. Our plan in 2020 was a massive growth plan. We were going to double our sales in 2020. And what we ended up doing in 2020 was double our aggressive growth plan. And it was because we had this omni-channel business that was so foundational. Yep. And we weren't just one dimensional. We focused on being balanced. And there were so many people in the beginning of the business who were like, only focus on one type of customer. You can't market to everybody and only focus on one channel. And I was like, I hear you. The textbooks say that, but Liquid IV is for everybody. And I believe I'd rather grow it slowly over 10 years and have all these channels. So when shit hits the fan, like COVID, when all these businesses are don't know what to do, we had all these things to balance the business out. So I'm grateful. I trusted my gut and went with, it's for everybody and we're going in all channels, which not necessarily is the smartest thing, but it worked really well for us.
I'm a big believer in that, Zubi. And I think early in my career at Wine Library, somebody said to me, Gary, the wine business is around selection, price, and service. And to be successful, and this was the guy who had the biggest distributor company, hundreds of millions of dollars. I'm 22 years old. It's our first lunch meeting. And he goes, you got a lot of talent. You know your dad for a long time. And because I've been in the store since I was 14. This is me kind of like coming of age. He goes, you're going to have to pick two of the three to be successful. I didn't say anything. 6 years later, there was like this huge New York Times article written about me, like building the biggest wine store in the country so fast, kid. And I told the story and I didn't mention him by name. And I said, and I remember him saying that. And I remember walking back to the store because it was close to the store and saying, that's the stupidest advice I'd ever heard. Why won't I just deliver on price, service, and selection? The guy wrote me a letter. He goes, read the article. It's unbelievable. He goes, I have a bad feeling I know who that person was. Congratulations. And I think the point there that Brandon was making for a lot of people in the chat right now or listening after we record this, too many people listen to people that have done it before them. The market changes. People are different. People have different strengths and weaknesses. Dynamics change. The context has changed. One of the reasons that I don't think I share my passions, I don't think that I'm giving advice or should be listened to. Why? Because there's too many nuances on the person on the other side of it. For me to actually give advice is when me and Brandon actually spoke. Zubin, when you and I actually have meetings, give me all the context. I'll do the best I can to give good advice, pattern recognition, good intent. But Gary Vee, the character, I'm trying to share my passions and hypotheses and general nuances that I see, but it's not actual advice because the human on the other side of it needs to give too much context for that story to be advice. And for everybody who's listening, me, everybody else in the world, your parents, Brandon, Zubin, like you have to contextualize it to you, but you have to contextualize it from optimism, not from like excuses to why not. Because then when you're being cynical and being in no culture or negative culture or spewing negativities, your game is over already.
And I don't think it's bad to listen to people who have done it before. Like I listen to a lot of people who have done it before. I think the key to that is to put it through your own filter.
Correct.
And contextualize it for yourself and say, hey, that was from this generation. What, you know, what from that relates to me? And then sometimes you listen and use all of it. Sometimes you use none of it. And I think that's why, like, people always ask about mentors. I think they're great, but you have to contextualize it through yourself and your filter and your, you know, your life or your business, you know?
Yep.
Absolutely. I think that that it's really interesting. We, in some ways, when you look back at the Liquid IV journey, now with Exit, and we'll get there in a moment, but if you look back like the first 5, 7 years, 8 years, you're like, look, it's a slow burn. Everybody's going fast. But I think one of the things, and there's a lot to be learned here for everyone who's tuning in. One of the things that we were blown away, so as an agency, we met with a bunch of different brands, right? That were at a certain point, they wanted to blow up their direct to consumer, et cetera. So we meet with them. Robbie Deeks and I walked out of the meeting with you, Brandon, and we're like, fuck, this is really interesting because they have the kind of the expertise, the energy, everything around all these direct to consumer brands we meet with. But what they have that many of those don't have is like operational wherewithal. They've shipped millions of products. They've done this. They've fucked up from a supply chain standpoint. They've gone through all that. Where like so many of these brands that just go hockey stick up, I mean, you all know, they will run out of inventory. They won't have this. They won't have that. There's so many issues that happen that like you had a legit business. You had a solid business once you decided to like focus in on direct to consumer. Again, my point isn't that everybody should do that. It's not for everyone, and they won't be able to succeed, frankly, if they want to do that. But your ability to do that gave you kind of a moat, created that moat for you and gave you an advantage that others didn't have. And I think that's really the interesting part, that it's like, to your earlier point, take whatever path you want, but understand that at the end of the day, and this is what everyone's realizing, that it requires a multi-channel approach to be successful.
But I will say this for people who are listening who are very early in their journey. Brandon's capability for that kind of distribution and then that street dirt 4 years of entrepreneurship to make it successful box by box, because he was scaling unscalable behavior, is really the only way to win big box. And that's if you're even lucky enough to be able to get into big box. So the reality is that 97 to 98% of the people listening right now are going to start DTC. And to your point, Zubin, I think this still keeps coming down to just Brandon's a good businessman. And Rachel's a good businesswoman at McMack. And like, I hope we get back to that. It's not just about raising money, doing Facebook arbitrage, like, the conversation of being a good businessman or woman, I'm almost starting, I can't believe what I just said. I'm starting to realize I'm thinking about the same way I don't use hustle anymore because it's been manipulated. And now I use work ethic as one of the things that matter. I'm starting to think that I'm going to start using businessman and woman more than entrepreneur, because I think the word's been manipulated and understood to be something else. Like, you have to be good at business. This is business.
Yeah. I mean, you guys have been through it as much as anybody, but there's so many dark times or hard times where if you didn't have that extra gear inside of you to go win, it would have felt folded over. And that's why, even as I'm getting hit up now all the time for different investment opportunities, and hearing you say that actually helps me, because I'm kind of trying to figure out my own thesis with that. But it comes down to the entrepreneur or the businessman and woman who are leading it, because it's just that little extra bit of effort, waking up at 4 a.m. to whiteboard, like whatever it is to figure that thing out, like that is the win. Like this category wouldn't have existed without the sort of the obsession.
And two things, Uzi, DTC stands direct to consumer. It's a term we use in e-commerce. And Brandon, that's what goes back to my earlier point, which was you're not waking up at 4 o'clock if you're doing it for the Lambo. You're not calling a customer and apologizing and driving to their house and saying, sorry, if you don't worry about your reputation, because you're going to do business forever. Like, this goes back to tried and true, good, kind, real, authentic realities of life that will be the sustained model in the supply and demand of as many businesses that are out there. And I think that I just can't get this out of my stomach anymore. If you don't like it, you're not gonna pull it off. And yes, do some people frantically that chase money pull it off? They do. But I know those people. You know what happens? They become even more miserable with the money. They start doing terrible shit. You know this, Brandon, you run in the LA circles. Like, it's Star Wars. There's the Jedis and the dark side, and both can win to a point. But Jedis will always win, so they can have sustainable lives, right? The dark side that's about it for the money, they do it for the insecurity. They can pull it off too, because that energy's high. Darth Vader's fucking powerful. But what happens is when they get the bag, it gets really dark. It does, and it gets, and like, that's what I don't want. Like, there's people here who may say, Gary's full. You know, I hear it from the dark Jedi's, like, fuck Gary, he's too foofy. You know, I get drilled on both sides. Gary, you know, is the, like, I'm losing on both sides. Like, he's too entrepreneur. On the other side, the entrepreneurs are mad at me because I'm saying too much foofy shit. And I'm just like fucking lonely out here, but I'm like, fine. But like, it gets bad, Brandon. It gets bad. Like, when I heard of your exit, I felt such calmness. I'm like, that's a base for a lot of good stuff. I've seen some exits to contemporaries, acquaintances, investments, even lightweight friends, and I go into immediate anxiety. Because I know the next 2 years is gonna be not good. And I just hope they can get out of it. And I've had those combos, and they don't wanna hear it. They don't wanna hear it. It's hard.
Yeah.
Look, I think that, two thoughts. One, cliche to say it's about the journey, not the destination, but anyone who's done sales, anyone who's done anything like that, to Gary's point, you'll realize at a tactical level, you get super excited right before the sale, you get that sale, and then what, right? That adrenaline rush is gone because you're not enjoying the everyday of it. And then you're going back down into a valley, and then you got to go back up. So look, it's about sustainable happiness. I think going back to your point, good businessmen, good businesswomen. And I think that if we're talking about, again, Rachel and Brandon, what you realize very quickly is that they're good people, that they're good, solid characters. They have solid business fundamentals. So to Gary's point, it doesn't matter where they start, D2C, big box, whatever. They get business, they work hard, but they're solid characters. And so, yeah.
And they have that gear.
Oh, yeah.
That gear that I call, it's that scene in the movie where like the hero gets punched in the face hard and you think he's gonna get like knocked out and they kind of like go there and they spit out the blood and maybe even a tooth and they look back at you and then the bad guy is like, oh fuck. That's the thing I'm looking for, right? You know, I knew in that moment in Vegas that if Brandon got punched in the fucking face, he would spit the blood out, spit the tooth out, look back at you and be like, now you're in fucking trouble. I felt that about Rachel. I feel that about myself. And I think that's that little thing right there. That's the weird one. That's the 9-figure exits, the 10-figure exits, the 8-figure consistency business that kicks, like, this is sports. This is fucking sports.
Frankly, like, that when that moment happens, and in 2020 there are a lot of those, there's some weird thing inside of me. Like, I think a lot of good leaders and entrepreneurs, when things are going good, can roll with the momentum and keep it going. But there's something when like the greatest challenges hit us, like in March of 2020, or, you know, during the summer of 2020, I mean the whole year, where like some extra thing happens where I'm like, now it's time for me to even step up more and make sure I lead my team and bring positive light to our community. Like, that is the moment where the best, the actual real winners step up the most. You know, there's a Martin Luther King quote about like in times of, you know, in easy times, you know, anyone can lead through it. It's the times of darkness and despair where true character comes out. And I think that is that extra gear. If you can see that in someone, it's pretty cool. It's pretty cool.
As we end today's podcast, I want to give a huge shout out to the people, you know, it's so funny, people that leave reviews and written reviews of this podcast on Apple, Spotify, and all the other platforms just mean the world to me. You've taken an extra 13 to 95 seconds to show love and also give context to people of why this is a worthwhile podcast. So I appreciate that so much. And even more fun, because I think we all love a little cosign or a shout out or a little awareness, I'm gonna have the team give a couple of shout outs daily on our favorite reviews. So take it away. Which were our favorites this week?
Thanks, Gary. We have an amazing review from a user named Hammers Half that reads, "Sports cards, NFTs, New York Jets, and the feel of a double shot of espresso in podcast format. Thank you so much, Gary V, for investing in the lives of so many." Thank you again for that amazing review. And to everybody listening out there, if you leave us a review, you might just get shouted out in the next episode.